knows this better than anybody. End zone, Cobb, touchdown! Unbelievable! That's missed, but right now you're looking at 25, 27 yards or so where they need to get to give themselves a chance.
They're also looking at play clock down at 3. Rodgers spins to his left. Comes underneath, and the pass is incomplete, out of bounds. Now they say complete. The official, the second one, came in and overruled the other, Jared Cook, and with 3 seconds left, the Packers are going to have a chance to win it.
Unbelievable.
The first official came down the sideline and said incomplete. The official from behind the play said the catch was good, and he was right.
Wow, Jared Cook, he knows where he is, and he's able to keep his feet in, and the throw that Rodgers is able to make, moving to his left.
Unbelievable. 36 yards on 3rd and 20, and by inches, Jared Cook keeps his feet in bounds and makes the catch. And that was a good overrule and a good catch by Jared Cook. And now you're talking about a 50-yard field goal try by Mason Crosby to win the game. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable is word when talking about Aaron Rodgers. That was Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call. Good morning, and thank you for being awake and tuning in this blustery conference championship Sunday here in Las Vegas. Whether listening on Fox Sports Radio 1340 or if you're streaming on the Las Vegas Sports Network website, this is Out of Line, and I'm Brian Feldman, live in the Fox Sports studio. We are right here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. If you tweet, you can follow the show, comment, and ask questions on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM. We always appreciate a new like and follow on the Facebook page, which is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Callers are welcome and even encouraged. I am no different than you. I love sports and I'm full of opinions. I just get to have a microphone in front of me and I get a producer. So if something interests you, or if something pisses you off, pick up the phone and let me hear it. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340. I have said we a bunch of times, and that's because there is a we. I don't have a mouse in my pocket. Magnum, the producer's here, and with your assistance, my brother, let's get this new feature going. What's on tap, man? What's on tap? Hold on, we'll get to it in 1 second, man. But we're going to get our new feature going. We've got a brand new sponsor here. And he is, it is Bubby's University. And let me tell you a little bit about Bubby's University. They are located on 4570 South Hualapai, Tropicana, and Flamingo. And if you want more information on this awesome place, Mark Sedell had been there every Monday Night Football, bubbysuniversity.com. You can go there for more information. Let's do what's on tap. Okay, I got it. Time for what's on tap, and it's going to be pouring out thanks to Bubby's University. Today, it's about conference championship games. They'll be played today, and you can be sure we have opinions and our picks, and shortly, Lotus Broadcasting's own Chris Wynn will be joining to talk about the Runnin' Rebels, who had a super dramatic, real ugly, double overtime win against Air Force at the Thomas and Mack yesterday. Today's Blazin' and Fact This are well worth sticking around for, and so is today's giveaway. That's what's on tap. On tap.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
All right, there we go. We'll have that start in the segment next week. But on tap at Bubby's University, earn your degree in food, gaming, and spirits. The only majors are fun and good times. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Again, Bubby's University is at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. As I mentioned, we've got a whole lot to talk about today, man. You know, it's funny. I predicted a while ago, if you remember, and I harped on it last week. I even said a prayer about the Detroit Lions, that that they would lose the last three games. After they beat Chicago, I said, look, here's what's going to happen. They're going to lose at New York. They're going to lose at Dallas. They're going to lose at Green Bay and not make the playoffs. While Washington helped make my last prediction not come true by losing their season finale to the New York Giants, and the Lions backed in and then lost to Seattle. And, you know, it's typical. We're used to that as Lions fans, truly. But on Christmas Day, we still, with still two games to be played in the regular season, I said who the Super Bowl would be. But here's what I'm going to let you chew on for a minute. When the smoke clears, Magnum, why do I see the New England Patriots playing the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl? I'm going to throw up during break. I might blow a couple of staples out of my hernia. I'm sick to my stomach. This is out of line, and we'll be right back. Well, that was going to commercial on Christmas Day with two games still to be played in the regular season, and the Packers trailing the Lions at that point in time still in the NFC North, and everything happened just the way I thought it would be. And I said, fear the Packers, and you got to fear the Packers. I can't go away from them. I'm actually, I'm going money line today. They're getting 6 points. Patriots are giving the Steelers 6 points as well, but I'm going money line today. I don't know how I can pass that up. Magnum, you predicted something as well, and I can't bypass this. This was pretty damn good when you predicted that the Chiefs would take a crap because of their head coach.
Andy Reid, as great as he is at winning games, he still goes into this shell with this conservative garbage where they're up 14-0 in the first half. They score 3 points the rest of the game. It's nonsense. You cannot continue to make the same stupid mistake over and over where you go to this conservative BS and it costs you games. Every single year it happens with Andy Reid. There's a reason why, for all the great teams he had in Philadelphia, they made one Super Bowl, 5 NFC title games for Andy Reid, 1 Super Bowl appearance. You want to know why? Because the guy does not learn. He's stubborn, and he continues to do it year in and year out, where they go into this conservative game plan. They get up. They start managing the clock. Play to win the damn game. I'm sick of it.
What do you think, man? That was you, and you couldn't have called it any better. I mean, Andy Reid does tend to get a little bit of conservative in the biggest games of his life, and maybe why, like you said, he hasn't won a Super Bowl playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win. We saw Jason Garrett do that against the Packers, leaving Aaron Rodgers 35 seconds. Big mistake, but hey, good call on the KC Chiefs.
Yeah, it was almost like taking candy from a baby to bet against them last week. And had they won last week, there's absolutely no way I would have predicted them to play that good 2 weeks in a row against a superior opponent. The sad thing is, maybe the Steelers weren't a superior opponent, but it was the same thing with Andy Reid. 9 minutes to go in the game, they're down. What are they doing? They're like in the 15-minute offense there. There's no urgency. They have absolutely no fire under their ass. They're running the ball like they're running plays as if they're winning the game. Dude, you are down 8 points. You need a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. Like I said earlier in the week with Paulie, all you need to know about Andy Reid, 4th and 2 from the Steelers 3, or 4th and 1 from the Steelers 3, they run a 2-yard pass to the fullback to get the first down. That's it right there. That is Andy Reid in a nutshell.
Terrified of turning the ball over.
Well, he's got like the terrified. Big old IHOP menu that he walks around with. I just don't get it. I don't understand how every single year you could sit there and watch your game film and the light bulb not go off that says, hey, we need to have a little more urgency here. They did it last year against the Patriots. Instead of running a 2-minute offense, they're running the 12-minute offense. I just don't understand. And I like Alex Smith. I know he's a guy who, there was a column in the KC paper earlier in the week questioning whether or not you can win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. Look, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Doug Williams, who had a phenomenal year that year, Mark Rippon.
Those aren't bad. You know what? Those are quarterbacks that, in their little brief stints, put up some great numbers. Doug Williams later in his career, but he had matured. But Brad Johnson and Trent Dilfer are great examples of quarterbacks that have won a Super Bowl that were far from superstars.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I mean,
I would say, and I agree with you 100%. I would absolutely put, matter of fact, I would say Alex Smith is better than both those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And they can win a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer, everybody forgets. Yeah, the Ravens had a phenomenal defense that year, but what did they go, 4 or 5 games in a row without scoring an offensive touchdown? I mean, that is unheard of.
Yeah, but the difference is, Megs, their defense, that Ravens defense rivals, I'm not going to say they're the Bears of 1985 and Buddy Ryan defense, but I would say next to the Bears of 85, the best I've seen in my lifetimes was the 2000 Ravens defense. I've never seen anything like that in my life.
And I'm not saying that the Ravens defense of 2000 wasn't that. I'm just looking from an offensive standpoint.
Well,
that team could win games and win a Super Bowl having an inept of an offense as they did.
True. And again, your point about Alex Smith is exactly right. If you're putting him in that category, he wouldn't be a superstar quarterback, but he definitely has the goods to play quarterback. The key is when you've got a defense that good, and that's why Brad Johnson and Trent Dilfer both won Super Bowls. Brad Johnson with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Trent Dilfer with the Baltimore Ravens. But if you think about it, Mags, when they won those Super Bowls, they were at later stages of their career.
Yes.
They understood the game. By that point in time, if the game hasn't slowed down to you, you're not still in the league when those guys won their Super Bowls.
Let's look at a hypothetical. Alex Smith on the Arizona Cardinals. How good is that team with Alex Smith?
Oh, they're better. They're better than with Carson Palmer.
Are they may be a Super Bowl team.
Possibly, if everyone stays healthy. But I want to tell you, to your point, though, you still have to be a serviceable quarterback that doesn't make mistakes. And I'll tell you a guy that made mistakes in the Super Bowl. The Steelers could have one more Super Bowl. Neil O'Donnell wet the bed and literally threw the ball right through a defensive back at the end of the game.
Larry Brown,
who won Super Bowl MVP, by the way, that year.
Then got a huge contract and faded away.
And was nothing. But to Neil O'Donnell, Larry Brown was the size of a monster. But again, another great example of that, and I was going to say, in the other divisional playoff game in the AFC between the New England Patriots and the Houston Texans, you saw that, again, defense does win championships. The Texans, number one rated defense in the National Football League, even without J.J. Watt. But New England is right there as well. They're a top five defense in the National Football League. The difference is the Houston Texans have the most overpaid quarterback in the National Football League. I won't say overrated. I don't think anyone's rating him very high. I think the Houston Texans needed a quarterback desperately. They got enamored with a couple of games that he played in Denver when Peyton Manning was hurt, and he got a $35.5 million contract. But the point is, he is not – he's Neil O'Donnell. He is not good enough to win the Super Bowl. As good as the Texans' defense was, and we saw it in the first half against the Patriots, they played flawless. Clowney is becoming one of the best defensive linemen in the game, and if he can stay healthy, it's scary to think how good he's going to be. With Cushing, and I just don't know if J.J. Watt will ever be the same person. When you start having back injuries and you're a defensive lineman, your days are definitely limited. But the point, again, is defense wins championships, but you at least have to have a quarterback, a mature quarterback that understands his role is not to win the game. His role is to not lose the game by trying to do too much. Play within yourself, play within the scope of the team and the offensive system, and let the defense go out and dictate the play. And great defensive teams that have won the Super Bowl, a la the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a la the Baltimore Ravens both times. Because I don't care that Joe Flacco was the MVP. I've never been enamored with Joe Flacco. I'll say he's better than Trent Dilfer when he won the MVP, maybe better than Brad Johnson. But Joe Flacco, come on, that guy will never wear a golden jacket, ever.
Well, yeah. Flacco, I think Flacco falls in the category of good but not great quarterbacks,
yeah.
And he's a guy who basically the Ravens were kind of forced into giving him that huge contract because he was coming off the Super Bowl win. I mean, you couldn't have walked away from him at that point. And based on how the Ravens have had quarterback play basically their entire existence, I mean, they basically have never had a quarterback as long as they've been the Ravens as good as Flacco. And Flacco gets a lot of heat because I think people expect him to be better, but he's a quarterback who can win you games. He's a quarterback who, if he gets hot, he can win a lot of games.
He's smart as hell.
He's a very intelligent guy. He's got a big arm. He's got a lot of size. And I think he's a guy where I would not mind Joe Flacco on my team, but I wouldn't be in love with Joe Flacco if he was my quarterback, but I would really like him. We'll put it that way.
He'd be okay. And, you know, again, with a good defense, he showed the guy can win. Give him a good defense, an okay running game, a couple of decent wide receivers, and he'll get the job done for you. But again, it's going to take a sound defense. Tom Brady, as good as he is, you got to have a defense. And New England always seems to play good defensive football. They're doing it again this year. Their defensive secondary might be the best secondary left in the postseason. McCourty, man, has just been playing lights out in the postseason. So I like them a lot. But talking about the other games, Pittsburgh again, last week in the Kansas City game, as we mentioned, all field goals. The Killer Bees, they said the Killer Bees were Ben, Brown, and Bell. I think you got to add Boswell to the Killer Bees and add a fourth one because the guy scored every point Pittsburgh scored. Mags, they're not going to win the Super Bowl kicking field goals against the New England Patriots.
No, and it's weird because I do think that Todd Haley, his play calling, again, we were on Andy Reid about how just awful his play calling was. Todd Haley shouldn't get a pass either. Because if they're playing any other team, the way he was any other good team, we'll put it that way. The way he was calling the plays there, you just really have to question, why would you go away from what's working? Le'Veon Bell had 160 yards in that game, and basically they didn't even give him the ball in the second half. He could have run for 200 yards. I don't think that's going to happen this week.
Well, I was going to say 337 yards for Le'Veon Bell in two games. He's busting all kinds of records. It's in his first two preseason games, or first two postseason games, and his vision is absolutely unbelievable. I agree with you 100%. I'm amazed they go away from him. They definitely are proficient. They get in the red zone, but you got to finish, and you can get away with it against Kansas City. Like I said, it's going to be a whole different ball game against New England. We got to go to break here in a second, but before we do again, on the other side of the coin, one question, Max, before we go to break, something to ponder. We'll talk about this later on in the show as well. But everyone says when it comes down to league MVP, Tom Brady's got to be in the mix, even though he missed four games with what he's done. But I think from what I'm hearing, really, what Aaron Rodgers has done, winning eight straight games, coming from 4-6, making a statement and backing it up like I've never seen before, he has got to be considered. And Matt Ryan, I found some tape on him, and eventually I'll play for you because I gotta eat crow when I eat crow. Matt Ryan played a great game against Seattle. He has played great all season long. I still think he's going to wet the bed today against the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay's defense is depleted. Wide receiver-wise, they are in shambles. They're all going to play. It's amazing. Jordy Nelson is going to suit up with some kind of flak jacket on with two broken ribs, which I think he's going to be nothing more than a decoy. Janis has, it's a quadricep injury. You've got, what's the kid with my favorite name?
Geronimo.
Yeah, Geronimo has a groin injury.
Yep.
And then you've got Davante Adams, who's probably their best weapon at wide receiver right now with Jordy Nelson gone, and he's got a pretty bad ankle injury, and that looked like a bad... I watched it again. I watched the Green Bay game again last night, ironically, and, man, it was rolled up on pretty heavily. So
yeah.
They are the walking wounded as far as the wide receivers go. We already know their running back situation. I mean, they are completely depleted there as well. This is all on Aaron Rodgers and a couple of tight ends, and what scares me, Mags, is this guy is so damn good, he can still get it done with that.
Yeah, and I also like the Packers to win the game because I don't think Rodgers will make mistakes. I do think Matt Ryan will make mistakes, and in a game where I don't see any defense or any in a game where I don't see any stops being made other than turnovers, I just think that at the end of the day, the Falcons make more mistakes than the Packers, whether it be interceptions, whether it be failed opportunities on fourth down. I just think the Packers get the job done. Honestly, I hope I'm wrong because I would love to see the Falcons go to the Super Bowl. But I know he played well last week. I just don't trust Matt Ryan.
I just, Mags, whoever wins the game between Pittsburgh and New England, they're going to go to the Super Bowl for a record ninth time. The Packers are looking at going for the sixth time. The Falcons have only gone once. So if you're looking for an underdog and they lost, and I think Chris Chandler was their quarterback. So if you're looking at an underdog, even though they're not really the underdog, they're the 6-point favorite today, that's the team to go with. My brother lives in Atlanta. It's a place that I lived briefly when I did an internship at CNN. So I have a little bit of heart for the Falcons. And I told you before, both Super Bowls I've seen in my lifetime were at the Georgia Dome. And today, by the way, will be the last time an event like this is ever held at the Georgia Dome. Listen, we're going to go to break. Don't forget, on the other side, we got Chris Wynn coming up. Hopefully, a little bit later on, I heard we're going to hear from my old friend, Dreadlocks Gandhi, towards the end of the show. That will definitely be interesting. He's on the lam somewhere. And we still got to talk a little bit. We got Blazing coming up. We've got Fact This coming up. And I do want to talk a little bit about the NBA, because there's one guy named Kawhi Leonard that I think needs to start being talked about as one of the best players in the National Basketball Association. All that and more coming your way out of line.
Sad. Depressing. You know, when you play as well as you did in Albuquerque and then you come back and, you know, they had good effort. I should say they didn't have effort. They had good effort. They had good energy. Not a lot of execution. Not a lot of execution. Not a lot of, took a couple steps back in some areas. Maintained our desire and effort, which was good. I thought our defensive intensity was good. Outside of a few possessions there where we had some miscues on defense and let Max get open for his threes. I thought we played a really good first half. Outside of that, you know, I was anticipating the same second half, and then we just went dead offensively. We're just not very good. Got right to the basket several times, drew up plays where we got them layups, drew up plays where we got them wide open shots, and got to make shots to win the game. Defense will help you win championships, but not if you can't get there because you can't score. So we're going to have to try to figure out some things to shoot the ball at a higher clip. And right now, we've got some really good players who just aren't consistent. And so I got to do a little psychology here and get these guys up. And I still believe in them. I do. They just, because they've shown me glimpses. So we got to get more consistent play.
Marvin Menzies, that was after the San Diego State game when they came home from New Mexico. And the reason I played that, I had to leave the game early last night, obviously doing Rebel Extra, but I played it because you could have played it last night, except there wasn't the disappointment of the loss. Talking about the second half, how they've got to figure out the score. They drew up plays with layups. That second half of that game was as sloppy as anything I've ever seen, but it turned out to be a win. Hey, joining in to talk UNLV Hoops, my good friend and colleague Chris Wynn. Chris is a fellow Michigander and a fellow longtime suffering Lions fan. He is also a regular guest host on the Seton Edge Show weekdays right here on Fox Sports Radio 1340, and he is a guest on several other shows here at Lotus Broadcasting. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Christian Wynn, and Wynn is spelled not like Steve Wynn, W-I-N-N. Too bad you're not related to him. That would help. Chris, where do you even start when talking about yesterday's Running Rebels double overtime win?
Oh, wow, Brian. Good to see you on a Sunday morning. Absolutely fun to jump on with you. Wow. That game, you know, look, there was a lot of ways to describe that basketball game last night. Masterpiece is not going to be one of them. Got to tell you. It started out in UNLV in the first half, played pretty much true to form and what a lot of people expected. I mean, it was 2 9-10 teams going into the game, two teams that had underwhelming records when it came to the conference at 2-4. And, you know, UNLV, of course, coming off that loss to San Diego State, I think a lot of people were questioning and didn't know what exactly they were going to do. And then you mentioned those comments that Marvin made about the team and its approach and the expectations they have for certain players, guys like Jovan Mooring, guys like Christian Jones and others. And to see that play out last night the way it did, it turned out, you know, it was an ugly game, no question. And Marvin Menzies talked about it after the game, Brian. He said, look, we end up winning the basketball game. But this was one of those tilts that could have gone either direction. Yeah, like you had all this kind of wackiness going on where guys hitting, running three-pointers, and, of course, Jovan making the three at the end of regulation to send it to OT. But, you know, make no mistake about it, I don't think in their heart of hearts, Marvin Menzies and that staff and those players are looking at that like it's some spectacular win last night. But yes, at the end of the day, it's a W, but they're going to look to pull their bootstraps up as they get ready to hit the road in the Mountain West.
Well, no doubt about it. And I mean, no, you cannot hang your hat on that game at all, other than the fact it's a W. I mean, that's big time. But Mooring, you know, I mean, they might as well move the three-point line back 6 feet because they don't even utilize the thing. They're taking NBA three-pointers regularly. I understood at the end of the game when Mooring had to fire up that three to save the game, but there's so many others that just you can take four more steps in. Plenty of time on the shot clock. Why do players continuously on this team continue to take bombs? I don't know. Listen, we're two-thirds of the way through this season, and UNLV is 10-10 overall and 3-4 in conference play. Are you either surprised or maybe disappointed with what you've seen to this point?
I got to say, I mean, I wouldn't say disappointment is a word I'd think of. They got a win against a Wyoming team that I don't think people expected them to get that W. Obviously, you go on the road in the pit down in Albuquerque and you get that win. Obviously this is a team that is in transition. It's a safe thing to say. And it's obviously with the coaching staff being in their first season and kind of the circumstances surrounding UNLV and its program, Coach Marvin Menzies, there's a perception out there that he's got a pass this year. And regardless of the results this season, that there's an expectation that he's going to still be here for the next 2 to 3 years at least. So I think it's a wait-and-see kind of attitude with this team. So, I mean, I think it's pretty much been true to form for the entire season, what this team has done. And I guess the expectations are that you're going to get some games like this. It was a fascinating thing to watch, though, Brian, I got to tell you, and Mags, because, I mean, sitting there watching that game, and, UNLV has got the 8-point lead going into halftime. And, we go into the media room after the first half and we kind of like, question, can they keep it up? You know, is this something that they can maintain and continue to go out there and be proficient, particularly offensive end? And then they come out in the second half and there really was a feel that, wow, it's almost like a repeat of that San Diego State game in the second half where they can't make a shot to save their lives. Just the fact that they were able to actually get this game to overtime, considering they shot 21%, I believe, in the second half, is absolutely astounding, right? I mean, to be that terrible from an offensive standpoint and still be able to get to overtime, I think that surprised a lot of people. And then, of course, you had the heroics in the overtimes where, you had Mooring hit the shot at the end of regulation. You got Jacob Van rolling down there, hitting the runner, three-pointer that, basically his time expired to force a second extra period. And then Jovan Mooring, which was kind of funny because I was talking to, of course, Bernie Fratto and Mark Anderson before the game. And Mark said, look, this with this UNLV team, as the Rebels go, it seems to me so does Jovan Mooring. And it kind of played out that way as, Jovan had his best game as a Rebel. He ends up dropping 30. And you mentioned him taking that three-pointer. I can't imagine Coach Menzies and the Rebels. That was like the offensive game plan there at the end of the second overtime. Okay, we're going to have Jovan just dribble past half court and just pull up and take a three. I don't know if that was necessarily the game plan. That's how it played out, and that's how they end up getting the win. But truly a game that, it was absolutely atrocious, I think, at the end of regulation. No one would say that was a pretty Division I college basketball game. But with the overtime, what went down in the extra periods, I think pretty much saved it and turned it into a thriller.
Well, it's like an oxymoron. I mean, it was an absolutely ugly game with a beautiful ending. And, because they won. But no question about it, Jovan Mooring finally reaches his average at the JUCO level where he hits 30 points. But my God in heaven, some real ill-advised threes again. He was pretty hot in the first half. And, I don't know what to say about it other than I can tell you this. Those people that don't think we have a point guard, and I'm one of them that have been saying this, he's second in the Mountain West in assists right now. He had six more last night. When you're second in assists in your conference, you got to say you got a point guard. So I'm going to say that Javon Mooring is morphing into that position. He is Lotus Broadcasting's Chris Wynn. He's on the show with us right now. And in your opinion, what more do you think Marvin Menzies can do to make this team better right now?
Well, that's a good question. And I think, you know, this is a team that I don't think anybody knows what the ceiling is or what the expectations are, really. And in a conference where, the predictions and the expectations are kind of all over the place, it's just really tough to predict. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do here in the next couple of games. You go on the road in this conference. You know, this when you think about the Mountain West, there's just not a quote-unquote force out there, right? I mean, last night, I would say a little bit of a surprise as you see Fresno State going in to Reno and knocking off Nevada, which I think a lot of people believe that Nevada is probably the best team in the conference. And the debate has been raging here the past couple of weeks. Is this a one bid league in the Mountain West? And, you know, is it going to be the conference champion and the tournament champion that ends up getting the NCAA tournament? And because the league is so down, this is not going to get any at-large bids as far as the league's concerned. So, you get the win against a team like Air Force. Now it's something to build on. Let's put it that way. I think that's the way Coach Menzies and his staff and the players on the squad look at it. As you know, hey, if they lose that game last night, I think the conversation is a little bit different, and we start saying that this is a team that just continues to shoot themselves in the foot. But hey, they get the W, and I think the dialogue changed. And you get a game like that for Jovan. We've talked about it all year long with Javon Mooring. You mentioned it a little bit in the past statement you just made. He's a wild card. I mean, he's someone who's tried to build his offense, and I think he's as game by game goes by with him, he's continuing to get better from an offensive standpoint, more confident. But there's still the issue with him is the defensive side of things, and also it's not so much the number of turnovers, but it's the big spots in games where Jovan is turning the basketball over. I think that's a question. So, as a point guard, those tend to get magnified. So I would tend to agree with someone like Mark Anderson. I think this team, the results, them going forward, is going to depend a lot on that point guard position and on Javon Mooring and how he's able to continue to improve as the point guard of the spot.
No, I agree with you 100%. They're going to have a point guard, but again, there's no question Marvin Menzies has a pass. He can put it however we want. But, you know, you get two-thirds into the season, Chris, and what happens is everyone starts forgetting that it was only the end of April when Marvin Menzies, the second or third choice, gets hired by UNLV. He is left with three players returning from last year, two of them with playing time, one with none, no starters, and probably the most significant player that he was the most excited about plays eight games and is gone, and they're going to try to get a medical redshirt. Of course, I'm speaking to Dwayne Morgan, who is now officially on the shelf for the rest of the year with that hip injury that did not respond properly to the surgery, and he's getting the rest of this year off. Hopefully, he'll get a medical redshirt. We'll see him back on the court at the Thomas and Mack next year. We are out of time and do need to take a break. Chris, I'll let you really quick before you go. Give me your predictions on today's conference championship games in the NFL.
Well, I think the Packers have been, running on borrowed time. I got to say, I mean, these guys have been banged up left and right. It was impressive to say the least. They go on the road, they get that win at Dallas. But I think that that run ends tonight. The Falcons just too much balance offensively, and a lot of guys that nobody really talks about from a defensive standpoint for the Falcons, I think, will come to play. And, Aaron Rodgers has been magical, no question about it. But I think that run ends tonight. And the Atlanta Falcons advance to the Super Bowl. And Mike Pritchard's all fired up because his former team gets there. As far as the offensive side, or if the AFC side is concerned, it's really tough to go against the likes of the Hoodie and Tom Brady at Foxborough in, obviously, in January. This is a team that when it comes to playoff time, they are money time. And so I'm going to go with the Patriots. The Steelers have every bit the talent on the offensive side of the ball to go toe-to-toe and maybe pull the upset here, but I got to go with New England. I think it's going to be an Atlanta-New England Patriots Super Bowl going forward.
No, I like New England. I can't go away from what I said. I actually do like Atlanta now that the game is here, but I've been saying the Packers since Christmas time and New England, so I'm going to stick with my Super Bowl prediction. There's hardly ever 2 days that go by when you can't catch Chris on either the Seton Ed Show here on Fox Sports Radio 1340 or on a show on one of our sister stations. Again, you can follow Chris on Twitter at Christian Wynn, and I recommend you follow him because he's more active on social media than any old guy I know. And I didn't know he was an old guy until he told me how old he was.
So I was loving the obscure quarterback references you had going on, Brian, with the Neil O'Donnell and the Chris Chandlers. I was having flashbacks to Mags' guy, Brownie Nagel, and our guy, Eric Kramer, too, as well, back in the early 90s.
Or the 300-pound Scott Mitchell.
Oh, God, the biggest loser. Well, listen, it's always a pleasure, my friend. And Chris, we'll be co-hosting Out of Line when we take the show on the road. We're going to be at Buffalo Wild Wings on Super Bowl Sunday. The show's on from 8 to 9, but the party and giveaways go on until well after the Super Bowl ends. Come on down. That is Buffalo Wild Wings. We got to take a break. Chris, pleasure, brother. We'll talk to you real soon.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Enjoy the games, guys.
Thanks, man. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is time for Blazing at the 215 and North Durango. That is Buffalo Wild Wings in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, right by Centennial Hills Hospital. At Buffalo Wild Wings, you'll experience two happy hours featuring $4 apps. The place is surrounded by flat screen and TVs, so you never miss a play. Tons of draft beer, spirits, and wine. And of course, there is no place better in America than Buffalo Wild Wings for wings, beer, and sports. Hey, yesterday, Adam Hadwin accomplished something only done 9 times before and only done 4 times by golfers on a 72-par golf course. That's shoot a 59. He did it in the third round of the Career Builder Challenge in La Quinta, California at the La Quinta Country Club. And he had to make a birdie first before he got to the par. He had to make a birdie on the 17th, hit a 6-footer to keep him going. And this is what he said. He had a big smile on his face when he walked off the 17th. And this is what he was smiling about.
Well, it's funny. I walked off 17. I said to my caddy, Joe, I said, man, it looks like there's a lot more people than when we teed off.
And there was a lot more people when he teed off as he was going for the course record towards the end of it. And when he walked off at the end, that putt, he had a 3-footer that he had to make for par to get up and down and get that 59, and had to be pretty scary walking off the golf course.
I was shaking. I really was. You know, I knew what was at stake. And the last thing you want to do is miss a 3-footer for 59.
He didn't miss it. He made it. And goes down in the record books. Canadian golfer, never won on the PGA Tour, 29 years old, twice on the .com Tour, twice on the Canadian Tour. And if he wins today, that put him in the lead by a stroke. If he wins today, he cracked $1 million for the first time in his career last year, a little over $2 million total in his lifetime. He'll make $1 million this week, get a 2-year exemption, and get invited to the Masters. I would say just a little bit that Adam Hadwin is a blazing. What you got for me, Mags?
Well, how about this pedigree? Your grandmother is a former Miss America. Your grandfather played for the New York Knicks. Your uncle played many seasons in the NBA, and your mother was an Olympic swimmer. Who is that? That's Coco Vandeweghe, the American tennis player, of course, the niece of Kiki Vandeweghe and daughter of Tana Vandeweghe. But she goes into the quarterfinals of the Australian Open, which has been wild. She defeats Angelique Kerber, who was the number one overall seed, Coco. Now into her second Australian Open quarterfinals. Her best showing was the semifinals of the U.S. Open last year. So she's playing some really good tennis right now. The sport we really don't ever talk about here, but the Australian Open has been wild. Both number one seeds
Andy Murray lost.
Yeah. Andy Murray lost today. Yeah. Djokovic is out. And now today, Angelique Kerber, the number one on the women's side, goes out. Shaping up pretty well for Serena, but Coco Vandeweghe playing extremely well, and she's a girl I saw play here in Las Vegas on a Challenger Tour, and I'm glad to see she's doing well.
Right now, she's blazing on Fox Sports Radio 1340. Oh,
she's blazing on and off the court. We'll put it that way.
All right. Well, that's a good thing. Blazing again, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango, in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, right by Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day featuring $4 apps, a bunch of flat screens and TVs. You never miss a play. Tons of draft beer, spirits, and wine. And, of course, there is no place better in America for wings, beer, and sports. That's Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango, in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. And, again, in 2 weeks for Super Bowl Sunday. I'll be there with Chris Wynn. Mags will be working the board. I think Ryan Wallace is going to be there helping out as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have giveaways. Special guest, man. Definitely show up. We'd love to see you. I know it's early, 8 to 9 Sunday morning, but we're going to kick things off right. So make sure you get out there. Hey, well, it is time now for one of my favorites.
Hey, wait. We got some breaking news here. I got to break in with this. Royals pitcher Yordano Ventura has been, he died in a car accident.
Wow.
Very young star. I'm just getting a text message. I'm going to look to confirm this, but wow.
What is with young pitchers and dying the last couple years?
Now the third really young star in the majors, of course, Oscar Tavares and, of course, Fernandez. But I'm going to look to verify this, but
two seasons, man.
I just got the text message from Chris Wynn.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, brother. Wow, that's too bad. Three in two seasons, man. That's just too much for young guys. Listen, it is time for Fact This. And I got a couple facts, and I got some thises for you. Fact. 2 years ago, Deflategate did happen, and Tom Brady was found guilty and penalized, missed four games. Hey, people, regardless of what you think, the reason it's such an uproar is because it forever tarnishes his reputation. Fact, New England quarterback Tom Brady, head coach Bill Belichick, and owner Robert Kraft are not fans in any way, shape, or form with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Right? Yeah, I think we'll all agree with that. Well, I'm going to put a scenario out there for you. I'm going to ask you which one you'd like to see. This is what I think about it, okay? What about this? If the Patriots win the Super Bowl and Tom Brady were to be the MVP, Roger Goodell, who has been avoiding attending Patriots games like they have the plague, will be at the Super Bowl and handing out all the trophies to all three of those guys. That would be a reason I'd want to see the Patriots win. What kind of drama? But I've got another fact this for you. How about Greg Popovich? Definitely regarded as one of the best coaches in NBA history. And once again, has the San Antonio Spurs right in the mix as one of the best teams in the association. Also a fact, Greg Popovich is outspoken when it comes to his strong dislike of our new president, Donald Trump. How about this? The Spurs win the NBA title. Do you think that's far-fetched? They beat Cleveland in overtime yesterday in Cleveland without Tony Parker and without Pau Gasol. Now, granted, Kawhi Leonard is becoming, you got to talk about him as one of the best players on the planet. And I'll say this much right now. Kawhi Leonard is the best two-way player on the planet. Most of these stars don't play defense. They get put up, matched up against a third or fourth option. Kawhi Leonard plays the best option every game, and he is still counted on to be the main offensive production for the San Antonio Spurs. Career high 41 points last night. This guy is off the chart. So to say that the San Antonio Spurs have no chance is absolutely ludicrous. They could. But how about this? They win the NBA title. And what happens when you win the NBA title? You get invited to the White House. And Craig Popovich and the San Antonio Spurs have to go to Capitol Hill. You know what'll happen, though? And so I'm saying, if you got to pick between the two of those dramatic things to see happen, I would say, obviously, I think we'd all love to see Popovich and Trump stand toe-to-toe, because Popovich doesn't pull any punches. But here's the deal. Popovich has the balls to tell Trump to pound sand and not show up. Hey, if this was a dictatorship right now, Popovich would be dead. Not only not the coach of the NBA, the Spurs, he'd be dead. So Popovich, you know what he'll do? He'll decline the invitation, or he just won't show up. That's what he'll do. But there's no avoiding it. If in 2 weeks the Patriots win today, in 2 weeks they will be at the Super Bowl. And if they win that game, Roger Goodell can't avoid them anymore. He will have to be there, and he will have to stand up there on the podium with Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and Robert Kraft. How great would that be to see? It's the one and only reason I could stomach the New England Patriots winning. It's the sixth straight time they've been to the AFC Championship game. No one's ever done that before. And Tom Brady, if he makes the Super Bowl, will be the only player in NFL history Mags, Chris, I know you're out there listening. He will be the only player in NFL history to have played in 7 Super Bowls. There is one other player that's played in 6, and I'm going to give that as a trivia question at some point in time. Only one other guy that's played in 6 Super Bowls, Tom Brady and him match. He played in 6. He played in 4 straight at one point. And I'll bet you know, I'll give the answer now if you guys are listening. You'll remember it in a couple weeks. At Buffalo Wild Wings, I'll throw this trivia question out there again. So bring your thinking cap, come out. Do you know what it is, Megs? There's no way you're going to guess it.
It's probably someone who has played, I would say their career probably was sometime in the 90s. They would have, you know what, for some reason, Charles Haley
jumps
out at me.
Charles Haley has the most Super Bowl rings in history with 5, 49ers and Dallas Cowboys, but no. This guy, and you were about to say it was in the 90s, he played initially for the Buffalo Bills. He was a defensive lineman, and then he won 2 Super Bowls with the Denver Broncos and John Elway. His name is Mike Lodish. Defensive lineman for the Buffalo Bills. He played at Birmingham Brother Rice.
1 minute and 54 seconds.
In Detroit. That's why I know about him. Played at UCLA and, of course, played a bunch of years in the National Football League. But Tom Brady, if he makes a Super Bowl, will be the only guy to ever play in 7 Super Bowls. Hard to say he's not the greatest player ever to live. Listen, it really sucks because there's a guy on the phone that I wanted to get on, and Dreadlocks Gandhi, we just don't have the time today, Mags. I'm going to definitely see if we can get next week. Dreadlocks, I know you're on hold, and I apologize tremendously, but next week you got to give us a call. You got some great stuff for us. It's the week before the Super Bowl. I'm going to find a way to squeeze you in. We just got a little bit caught off guard and a little too much today. Mags, it's time for our predictions, though. We got to give it game predictions. I can't go away from the Packers. Something in my gut says Atlanta's going to win this game, but I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. They're getting 6 points. I'm actually putting money on the money line. I'm going to say Green Bay is going to win this game 24-17, and I'm going to say the other game, New England, is going to make mincemeat of the Pittsburgh Steelers. People think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be 30-15. Another 5 field goals for Boswell.
Yeah, I like the Packers to win. I'm not sure if the game goes over. I have to think if the Packers going to win the game. It is going to go over. But I like the Packers to win, at least get in the 6. I definitely like that. But the other game, I also, like I said the other day, I think the Patriots win by at least 10 points.
I like them both. Hey, listen, we are out of time. I want to thank Chris Wynn for joining the show today. I want to thank my producer, Magnum, always thanking Magnum, our sponsors. And hey, Adeline is here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on Fox Sports Radio 1340. And I'll borrow a line from my good friend and fellow sports broadcaster, Bernie Fratto. If you like the show, tell your friends. If you don't like the show, tell your friends. Anyways, see you next week. Now.